Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along.
And this is Ashland Dave, and this is Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 228. It's the week of July 17th, 2016. I'd like to thank you for coming along. Thank you for coming back if you're a returning listener. If you are a first-time listener, this is probably not going to be the best episode to evaluate my podcast on, because this is going to be a special international edition. I spent the last 2 weeks in the country of Italy with my family. We had a great trip and did some distance running over there. I'm going to talk about that in the show and also talk about some other highlights from the trip. So that'll be really the main part of this, kind of a recap of this trip. We went to the region of Tuscany, and we also spent some time on the Amalfi Coast. And it was just a wonderful trip, and I've got a series of audio clips that I'll share with everybody. We did a major hike while we were there called Path of the Gods. I've got some audio clips from that. You have to climb 2,000 steps to get to the top of the mountain, which is over top of the Mediterranean Sea. Elevation is really not that much. It's about 1,500 feet, but it's straight up from the Mediterranean Sea. So the views are gorgeous. It's just not, when it comes to elevation, it's nothing like 5,000 feet or anything. It's just up right above the Mediterranean Sea. But the one of the best parts about this episode is that there's a lot of talking with my wife in here, Monica. She's always wanted to be on the podcast, so she's got a major part in this show. Unfortunately, though, the audio clip really sucks. A lot of the recording that we did was when we were traveling from place to place in the car. And most of the time when my digital recorder that I use to produce the show, when I'm doing anything on site somewhere, it does great. It picks up everything, even stuff you don't want it to pick up. But in this particular case, for whatever reason, it's just it was piss poor audio. But you can still hear, and so I decided to keep all that in the show. In some of the audio clips, we talk a little bit about some of the pitfalls of visiting a foreign country. However, I did have Monica is about, I would say, 75 to 80% completely fluent in Italian, so we were able to get by with just about everything. And even anything that she didn't understand, she never really let on to me or let on to the other person that she didn't understand it. So like I said, I do have some audio clips from the Path of the Gods. We'll go ahead and get into the show and then talk a little bit about some current events and my training and helping with Ashton Tom with his training for his 100-miler. And we'll check on the email bag section of the show. All right, we're currently on the road, the A3, the Autostrada, approaching Rome from the south. This morning we left Positano. We're on the A1? No, we're on the A1. But we're going to back up and talk a little bit about the first week of our trip, which was in Tuscany. And I'll talk about the runs that I did in the Tuscan countryside, two of which I did with my beautiful wife, Monica, who is going to be contributing to the internet. This is a special international edition of the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. So she's been wanting to get on the show really bad. So here we are in Italy, and now you'll be on the show.
All right.
So let's talk about when we landed in Tuscany, or landed in Rome on, was it the morning of the 29th? Of June. We rented a car, drove to an area called Cortona. Got lost a few times. Turns out Cortona is more of a region than a city, and we didn't really realize that, and I think our villa was actually in a place called Crete.
Right. Well, right. Then our other error was that we should have used Google Maps for navigation, and we didn't, so our address didn't actually exist on the map GPS we were using.
Right, so we ended up climbing this mountain two times in the car. It was beautiful. We just weren't getting anywhere. Finally found the villa, and just to kind of set the stage for why this trip happened, my parents' 50th wedding anniversary is this coming October. And to celebrate that, they decided to take the whole family to Tuscany and visit and travel. So they paid for their three kids. I'm one of three, and then all the kids' families. So just me and my sister are married and have children. So there was nine of us in this beautiful villa that was set
on top of a mountain, or I guess a mound, but Tuscany was mountainous where we were. And what was the mountain range there?
I think it's the Apennines.
Apennines. And we were in the Val di Chiana. Is that correct?
Chiana.
Okay. So my Italian's got a lot better pronunciation. I don't know what words I'm saying, but
crappy to just kind of crappy.
Yeah, just not as crappy. But fortunately, I have a half Italian wife who speaks, what, about 75%, 8% fluent, you think? Something like that.
50%.
Enough to get by, enough to find the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
It was more than that.
Yeah.
So we got settled in the villa, and it was kind of a whirlwind with everybody getting there. We had the first night, we went out to this local place and got some pizza and met the owner there. Her name was Maria, and Maria would prove to be a very nice person later, because we ended up having kind of a family reunion on Monica's side. We're getting food from her restaurant, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So we got settled in. Wednesday night, we had a big anniversary dinner for my parents, and I believe it was my brother-in-law, Jack, who had arranged to have a chef come to the villa and prepare three course or four course?
I guess it's four if you count dessert. I'm not sure if that's a course.
Okay. So you want to go over the list of stuff here? I think we wrote it down in our travel log.
Okay. So we had a ridiculous amount of antipasti that just blew our minds. That was about as... We were full after that. But it was stuffed tomatoes, two kinds of stuffed mushrooms, three types of bruschetta, two hot and one cold, pate on bread, mozzarella with tomatoes, stuffed cannelloni, different kinds of prosciuttos and salamis, and then a special Tuscan soup called pappa al pomodoro, which was tomatoes and bread and onions. Oh, that was really delicious. That was just our appetizer.
And just to comment on that, I think the bread itself was actually what the key to that is, what, day-old bread?
Yeah, they make it, it's like what the soup is, the soup that they make with leftover stuff, the leftover tomatoes, the leftover bread, and then you kind of mush it all together with this, with onions, and it's really delicious.
Oh, that was so good. And did I go running that day? What did I go running?
Wednesday we woke up.
What did we do?
We both went running separately.
That's right, I went later. You went with my dad.
Well, I went by myself, and then I went with your dad. I did some boot camp stuff at the pool, and you did 6 miles, right?
Six and a half.
You saw the guys hiking, and that what you did? You saw Jack?
That was a later run. My run was, let's see, if you look out the front of the villa, it was a two-story villa with five rooms?
Yeah.
And it's all wheat fields, at least that's what we could tell what it was, all in very linear, everything was squared or rectangled off. And these harvesting tractors were running all day, and so the road, we were about a half mile off the road, all up this hill. And so I didn't want to finish my run coming up the hill, because there's nothing worse than running up a hill for the end of your run. So I did this huge out and back along the road, several cyclists, lots of the farmers out there working, because it was a very rural area. And I think we're losing the left lane here, that's why it's all backing up. So I just did a big out and back, kind of retraced my steps a little bit, just to kind of, and you see a lot more on foot. There's other villas in the area, but nothing really close. But then there's also several, are we losing both lanes? Is that what's going on here? But there was also like remains of old villas, you know, like places with the roofs were gone, no windows, like where people either just moved on or, some farms have been consolidated. It was just a beautiful run, but it's just no break from the Tuscan sun.
Mm-hmm.
I had to throw that in there. But I really enjoyed it, and planned to get out there. After I finished that one, I definitely plan to get out there again. Okay, we are losing this lane. I got to get over. We're going to pause. Okay, so getting back to that 6.5 miler I did, it was really hot. I think I've already mentioned that. But the weirdest thing was I brought my Garmin just to measure the distance because I didn't want to do anything crazy while I was out on vacation. And once it picked up the satellites, it never picked up the different time zones. So I think I remember the first run, my Garmin said 2:33, which was the time back home in the Eastern Daylight Time. But it was 8:33 in the morning in Tuscany. And I never really felt I don't think we really, did you get affected too much by the jet lag?
I didn't,
probably more so maybe when we go home, but not.
Because we went the first 24 hours without sleep.
Oh yeah, the flight. We didn't really talk about the flight over, how we probably got 2 hours of sleep on the plane.
We didn't nap, we just came and went to bed that night.
At a regular time. Yeah, never really. A little hard to get up in the mornings, but we were kind of getting up around 8 or 8:30 anyway, because when we were with my family, it's a coffee family, so everybody's up getting their coffee early, especially my dad, he gets up very early. So it was a great run, other than the fact that it was just kind of weird to be knowing that I was actually running at 2:30 in the morning, you know, my normal lifetime. But we adapted pretty good. So Wednesday night was the big dinner. We talked about that. It was real nice. My dad did a welcoming toast for everybody. Then I did a toast. I cleared that with my sister because she's the oldest, and I thought maybe she might want to do it. But
they lose a lane.
They lose a lane.
All right, we're getting over.
If you've never driven in Italy, it's pretty crazy. I really don't think there's a speed limit at all.
Chevy Sheep, that's the car we're driving.
That's
weird.
Yeah. So I did a toast, and everybody was crying, you know, during my toast, right?
Yeah.
And then we had a wonderful meal. It was just way too much food, and then, which I thought was kind of weird, they brought out a cake at the end with candles on it. Is that a tradition in Italy?
I ordered a cake, and so he just loaded it up with, 50 candles for their anniversary.
Was that 50 candles?
They were a trick candle, so your dad couldn't blow them out. I think he almost caught the place on fire.
Yeah, there was a huge flame, and I didn't really understand. First of all, I didn't understand what the candles were. I thought the trick candles was a great idea.
It wasn't my idea, it was Stefano's.
Stefano's, that was the chef. So, all right, so that was Wednesday. What did we do Thursday?
Thursday went to Florence.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. We took the train into Florence. This is where we were kind of came right from the country directly into a big city, and you could really tell the difference in landscape as we went because we took a regional train in. And I just want to say one thing about the train station. It was Camuccia Cortona. They have high speed rail here, and there was a high speed freight train that came through the train station while we were waiting for the passenger train, and that pretty much scared the shit out of me. I don't know, what did you think?
Yeah,
it came in real fast. I think there was maybe a warning bell or some kind of warning something, and it came really fast through the train station, like a lot faster than the trains that come through Ashland, and it was kind of scary. And we have this thing going on back home now about high-speed rail coming through Ashland, and there's a lot of people that are against it, and we're against it. And I can see why. It was really, really fast. Gosh, that really surprised me, and it was pretty close to where we were. Yeah, if you had gotten hit by that, you definitely would have lost a limb. So anyway, so we went into Florence, did a bike tour, which was for 3 hours, I think, and that was, up to that point, that was the coolest thing that we had done. It was just really cool. Like Antonio was our tour guide. It was the three of us, my wife and my daughter, and then a couple from Australia named Michael and Nicole, younger couple. They were really nice, very talkative. And we had three stops and we're on bicycles. So we were in Florence cycling along with all these crazy-ass scooters and motorists. And I thought my daughter, Lucy, she'll be 15 later this month. The first mile or so, I could tell she was kind of scary and timid. But as we kind of got used to it, because it didn't really change that much, she did much better. And what did you think about the bike tour?
I thought it was great. We had so much fun. The hardest part really was maneuvering around big tourist groups in the piazzas. But I thought Antonio was really informative, lots of history. And then we got to stop three times and sample local foods. I think our first stop was a really famous bakery. We had a couple pastries and some coffee. Second stop was pizza and the salty focaccia bread that they have. And then third stop was ice cream, gelato. That was good.
Yeah, that was really good. We kind of continue that trend with having ice cream on just about every day, gelato. So the rest of that day, we walked around on our own. With the highlight of that being climbing up to the fortress at the top of Florence. And what was that called again?
Fortezza Belvedere.
Some really beautiful views of the city. And I had been to Florence once before. I believe it was the summer of 83. This being my third trip to Europe. Monica's been, I don't know, numerous times, maybe a dozen times. And then my daughter's been, this was her fifth trip. I had been to Florence before, and I remembered it being a kind of a dirty city with litter and graffiti. And why is this guy getting over? He's got the whole other lane. So now I'm stuck in sixth gear with my. Anyway, what else did we do? We went and saw.
Oh, well, we did this basic size Ponte Vecchio and all
that's
the
right.
Big churches
lots and lots of people, lots of really hot and clearly lots of tourists there like us. So Friday, I think we did another run Friday, or I did, and I wanted to do a loop this time, same time of the morning, and I did a 5-mile loop where I ended up, I just wanted to walk up the long driveway. Imagine the, if you saw the movie Gladiator, and if you remember the scene where all the, I can't remember who the horsemen were that came in and ran over the wife when she was standing at the top of her villa. You never saw the movie? But her driveway, minus the murder, her driveway was lined with Italian cypress trees. And that is just like what our villa looked like looking down the driveway. It was just this long, because the houses there are essentially built on top of the mounds. I don't think they're really built at the bottom. At least the nice villas, I guess. So I did a 5-mile loop that I was able to figure out by, I did, the first part was just a little bit of out and back, and then I saw my brother and my brother-in-law walking along the road, and they had told me they had looped around the back of the villa down a dirt road, and they kind of described to me how they had gone, so I decided to finish up that way, and it turned out being pretty good because I didn't have to run the same way I did before.
I ran with you 3 miles that day, I think.
No, I did 3 runs, and you ran on my third run. We did 3 miles together and stopped. Remember, that's when I knew we could do that loop.
But I thought I did one run where you left me after 3 miles, remember? Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, I did. I ran with you. You kept going, and I went back to the house.
Huh, maybe it was the six. You know, I can't even remember. It might have been the 6.5-miler that I did where I saw John and Jack. I don't remember.
It was, because that was the morning they went out on the hike. And Lucy slept really late.
All right, well, let's talk about that last run we did, and then we can talk a little bit about Positano. So we did a 3.1-miler?
Yeah.
That was where we ran, we did that loop through that little farm village.
That was Sunday. Yeah.
Sunday. So what'd you think of that?
It was
hot.
I think we just woke up too late. It was a little hot, but it was fun. We went to the pool, did some push-ups.
Oh, that's right, we did.
And we jumped in the pool, right?
Yep, that's right, we did.
Running close because we were so hot.
Yeah, there was a pool that kind of served these. I guess it was 5 villas in this little small gated community. The pool being completely underused and. You know, we might have been really the only one. We saw some other people there a couple times, but it was really, it was a beautiful pool. I don't know, what, about 25 meters long?
Yeah.
15 meters wide, something like that. Okay, so then let's talk about the DiMartino family reunion. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so some of my relatives live in a town called Cervia, which is on the Adriatic, probably about 2.5 hours from where we were. So on Sunday, they all came. It was my uncle and my aunt, who are in their early 70s, two of their 3 children, Valentina, who's 48, Elisabetta, who's maybe 42, their husbands, and each of them have 2 children. So they all came, plus my brother, his wife, and his daughter, Melissa, who's 6. And this is where Maria, from our first night, the pizzeria lady, came in because we went and ordered all of the food from her. She was just so lovely and so helpful and gave us a great price. Naturally, I ordered way, way, way too much. I think we had 7 pizzas, 2 large focaccia breads. She did a couple platters of this really good beef carpaccio that they make here. It's like a cured beef. And then she did a whole platter of, the Tuscan area is known for its ham. So she did a whole platter of like prosciutto, salami, all kinds of hams. And then a quick
gone out to a market and gotten a bunch of fruit.
Stuff and then put in a tray of little pastries for dessert, coffee. Now, they don't have big coffee makers here, so every time you make coffee, you do it cup by cup. So it was really time-consuming to make enough espresso for, 15 people or something.
But did your brother bring a coffee maker from his house?
Two coffee makers, which still took forever. It took about a half an hour to get coffee to everybody. But it was really fabulous. So the kids were running around playing in the yard, and we did some swimming until we kind of got in trouble for having too many people at the pool.
Yeah, something about the guy who owned the area, something about his insurance. So that's
anyway,
all right.
We had a fabulous reunion with everybody. Lots of good pictures and food, and
all right, so we were pretty worn out from there. That was Sunday. Then Monday we got it.
Then Lucy, our daughter, went home with my brother that night. So we said goodbye to David's brother, went to Rome. Our daughter went to Assisi. All my family left. Got very quiet. A little bit of tears, right?
Yeah. Oh, was that the night of the game? No, that was Saturday night.
Tears, kind of drank some beers outside and just sort of felt very tired and emotional.
So the listeners of the podcast will know that I'm a huge soccer fan, and so let me back up to Saturday night. My brother John and my brother-in-law Jack, the three of us went out to watch the Italy-Germany game, which was the quarterfinal for the European Cup. And the first place we went to wasn't as exciting, so at halftime we left and found another place a little higher up in the little village. What was that? Was that Foiana? So we were actually in an area called Foiana.
Foiano.
And this was the place where all the local national team fans were watching, and it was pretty exciting. Even though Italy ended up losing, it was very exciting to be there with fans of the national team and kind of be a part of the excitement when Italy scored. So we wrapped up our time in Tuscany on Sunday and got in the car Monday morning. We rented a car back at the Rome airport the Monday or Tuesday before, I guess it was whenever we got there, I guess it was the Monday before. And we headed out to just Monica and I for kind of a belated 20th anniversary trip, which we did not take last November when we had our 20th. Because daughter was in school and we didn't want to leave her at home by herself or with anybody else. And we had also had planned to then take that trip the first week school was out this past month in June when she went to a camp down in North Carolina. We were going to take a trip out west of the United States, but then that got changed when my dad proposed the trip to Tuscany. So we decided to use this as our belated anniversary, 20th anniversary trip. So we drove to the Amalfi Coast with reservations at a bed and breakfast in, is it Positano or Positano?
Positano.
This is one of those kinds of towns that it's, just look it up. It's
P-O-S-I-T-A-N-O.
Yeah. Just look that up on Google and hit images, and you'll see the classic postcard image of the Italian Amalfi Coast. I mean, it is, and it looks exactly like that. It's just a beautiful, gorgeous area. Lots of steps. It's on cliffs. We drove out that way and got a little hairy. What'd you think about the drive out there, Monica?
It was scarier on the way out than on the way back once you realize it's just hairpin turn after hairpin turn, narrow, narrow roads. People parking on both sides of the road, people walking, people on mopeds passing cars, people on bicycles. But once you realize that all the drivers really know what they're doing and nobody ever hits anybody, then you start to feel pretty confident. But it's just mayhem.
Yeah, so we drove past the bed and breakfast the first sweep through, and these aren't the kind of roads that you can just stop and pull in a driveway and back out in the road. There are no driveways, and there's nowhere to turn around. I think we ended up turning around in the middle of the road, which was the only, and we went back, and our host was standing outside Julio,
yeah.
And I just remember his father saying, you leave the car here.
Give us the car.
Give us the car. So we got unloaded and climbed the, 97, 102 steps up to the, yeah. the entrance area, and the rest of the week was just spectacular. We went out.
Carmine carried our suitcases.
And they carried our suitcases up there, which weighed a ton. And then we just spent a couple days just kind of hanging out with the rich and famous. Although we didn't see anybody famous, but we had heard Michael Jordan was there the day before we were, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about, I'm not going to go into a whole bunch of detail about everything we did there, because it's just kind of hard to describe. It's such a beautiful place. But I do need to talk about our trip to Capri, or Capri. What is the real pronunciation of that island?
Italian is Capri.
Okay, well, you're
Italian. It's Capri.
Okay. All right, well, we took a boat trip out there, and shall I describe that, or do you want to describe it? Okay. It was 70 euros a piece for this, what they called the best boat trip to Capri. I'm not sure what that is in U.S. dollars. I think it's about $100. $100 a piece. And it was awesome, except for I had one little problem, but I'll get to that in a minute. It was a boat that held about 44 people, I think is what he said. Our captain was Benji. And if you can imagine what, I guess, Tom Hanks looked like in Castaway when his hair was real long. Did the hair get real long in Castaway?
So, yeah.
That's what our captain looked like. And he had a... Except it was blonde. He was really nice. He spoke really good English, so we were able to... he described everything along the way. It was about a... He said it was, a 45-minute boat ride there, but we got up to the Blue Grotto, which is where... how would you describe that? It's like an underwater... It's an underwater cave.
An underwater cave that is a total tourist trap, really.
But we couldn't bypass it because all the boats went there.
Everybody wanted to go. But so you go, you park your boat there, and there's probably, 100 tourist boats there?
Probably.
And then you...
Maybe not that many, but it...
50 of all different sizes, large, small. And then you wait, and these men in rowboats...
Tiny little rowboats, standing up in them.
They somehow have a way of figuring out who's in line. And they eventually get to you, and you could have to... We could wait 20 minutes, or you could wait 2 hours. I think we were told that it was a half-hour wait, but it was really longer. And then they come by with the rowboat. You can get as many as 4 people in the rowboat. And then they row you up to the mouth of the cave, which is probably 2 feet above the water at the most.
Well, you were the one that did it. I mean, it looked... But the water, when the waves were coming in, was covering the entrance.
Yeah, the water could cover the entrance. And so they queue up, and there's a chain that runs from the outside all the way through the cave to the inside. And then you lay down. Everybody lays down flat, including the rower, and then he pulls you through on the under the cave. I mean, it's just enough room for this little boat, and then you come out in this underwater cave that's all just blue because the sun is reflecting off the water. I mean, it was okay. I think in my mind I built it up to be something bigger and more spectacular. You almost really couldn't see anything in there except the water just was like lit up blue. And you stayed in there for about 5 minutes.
And how much did it cost?
What did it cost? 13 euro.
And then
you come back out, and then the guy who rows the boat tells you he works for tips. Only person in Italy who gets tips. and so then you come back through, and then they take you back to your ship, your boat. So all in all, it was pretty much an hour and a half
about
version.
That.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was your experience.
That was my experience.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about my experience a little bit because it involves seasickness.
Yeah.
And it was just miserable. What happened was we got up to this, and they had said that, the day before was a 2-hour wait. Today's a 30-minute wait. And they wanted to know how many people on the boat wanted to do it. Well, I wasn't really interested in doing it because I don't like small spaces. And...
tell them it was pretty much akin to like riding a boat through an MRI.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's
about how small that space was.
Yeah.
It seemed right.
Yeah.
Well, I decided not to do it, and Monica kind of did at the last minute, wanted to do it. And I mean, it was fine that the people wanted to do it. I didn't realize that we were going to be stopping for so long. But we're in the Mediterranean Sea. This is not a lake, and the waves are there's waves and. You got all these boats floating around. They're all maneuvering so they don't hit each other. And we used to have a boat, and I never took it as far out in the Chesapeake Bay, which is probably maybe akin, those kind of waves are probably akin to what the Mediterranean Sea has close to land, because the boat was too small for that. But, you know, we would get close to that when we had it down in an area of Virginia called the Northern Neck. And I never, you know, when you're, I guess when you're piloting the boat, you don't, at least for me, from my memories of having a boat, which is probably 10 to 12 years ago now, never had any issue with floating around in the water at all. But for some reason on this boat, just floating all over, you know, bobbing up and down, like big, and seeing all the other boats, I started getting disoriented a little bit. Well, no, I was very oriented because I knew I wasn't feeling good, but I was starting to feel kind of sick. And I was thinking, man, I am so screwed because our people hadn't even got off the boat to get in the rowboats yet, and somehow I got us. Okay, now we're in a different. I got to survive this, and this is terrible. But so by then, there was no way I was getting on one of those little boats at all to go through that tiny little space. I kind of thought I was a little tougher than this, but I realized that it was really starting to affect me, and so I was just trying to focus on the cliffs and still parts, and maybe, you know, trying to do some people watching. There was just really no way to escape it. But I didn't vomit, which was I felt like I was going to. But there was such a relief when I saw people from our boat coming out of the cave and making their way back to the boat, and I was thinking, man, we're gonna be out of here. So once we started going forward, I was starting to feel fine again. But what it was feeling like was that hungover feel, not the hungover feeling, it was the feeling of when you've had too much to drink and you still got like 3 hours left in the party before your ride's taking you home. I mean, that's how screwed you feel, and that's what I felt like. It's like, man, and I got all day on this island and then a boat ride back. And I knew we had swimsuits on, it was a time to go swimming in the sea before we were gonna get to Capri. So I can't remember where we went swimming at the bottom of the.
They called it the Green Cave.
We didn't go in another cave, but we kind of stopped by it.
Yeah.
And they anchored the boat, and it was about a 20-minute, 30-minute time we could go swimming. They had towels, and I got in the water, and was starting to feel better. I was finally off that damn boat, and then I was the first one back on the boat. And then that's when I got sick.
Yeah.
And so I actually vomited in the... This is so funny.
Yeah.
I was worried that people were going to see me puking because they were still swimming in the water.
Yeah.
And I didn't puke just once, but it was like 3 times.
Yeah.
Felt a little better after that, but not really. So we finally got to Capri. Of course, they have to go all the way around the island before we dock the boat and get off. And that was really cool. I was actually kind of getting recovering a little bit because the boat was not stopping anymore. I think we did a couple real close passes to some rock formations. What was that? The archway?
Yeah.
I can't remember that either. But it was really cool. And then we came into the Marina Grande.
Yep.
And got off. And I guess it took me about 30 minutes before I started feeling better. And then... the rest of the day was really cool. It was very, very touristy there.
Yeah.
We're a little surprised. Lines for everything. Lines for the bus. Lines for taxis.
So you ride a funicular from the port up to the town, and then we got totally ripped off. Well, not ripped. It's just a very touristy lunch. We thought we found an out of the way place, but we didn't realize it was the third floor of a total tourist restaurant with pretty crappy food. Then you wait in line again.
You thought that was...
I thought it was crappy.
Oh, because the iceberg lettuce.
Yeah. And then we wait in line again for the bus. We take the bus to Anacapri, which is the smaller town. And then we get into another line for the chairlift, which takes you all the way to the very top, which was really pretty.
It was. It was a nice break. It was a 13-minute single chairlift, like you would do if you went skiing.
All the way up.
All the way to the top of the island.
The name I can't remember. And then we were up there for a while, and then we started to realize, like, we had to hike it because we had to catch the boat at 5. So, again, more lines, chairlift down, then more lines to the bus. We waited and waited and waited and waited for the bus, and the bus where we were going never stopped. So, eventually, we were talking to some other people in our line who were worried as well, and we all just got into a cab together and shared a cab down to the port. And it was good because at least the famous convertible cabs, that's the whole deal with Mercedes convertible cabs.
That was pretty cool.
Because everybody's rich and famous. So at least we got to do our cab ride.
And we saw that lady get hit.
Yeah.
The roads are very narrow there as well. Somehow they get it all worked out with the buses. they all fold their mirrors in, and we saw a pedestrian get hit by somebody who's had their elbow hanging out the passenger side of the car. The elbow hit the lady, and the car just kept on going. So we got down in time enough where we could go get a beer, and then we kind of met up with some of the other people from the boat, and everything worked out real well. And I was personally hoping it was just a straight shot back to Positano.
But we've learned in Italy there's no such thing.
Of course, we had to go swimming again, which worked out fine. I felt fine at that point. And when we got back, I think we walked back to the room and then took showers and then went back out, right?
We landed on the main beach. Yeah.
Oh, let's talk about our little taxi ride, boat taxi, from the private beach of the B&B over to the tour boat.
What's there to say about that?
Well, when we paid for the boat trip, we arranged it with our host, Julio, and he said to be down at the bed and breakfast we stayed at was called La Fenice, and it had its own private beach. They owned that hotel, and then they owned a villa, so all those people had access to this private beach, which, how wide do you think it was? I mean, there was like four beaches in Positano.
50 feet.
This one was probably 50 feet wide, cliffs on both sides, and just kind of goes back to a gorge.
Yeah, and some kayaks, a bunch of chairs, umbrellas.
Yeah, and we went out swimming in the sea. It was really cool. But we were told to be down there at 8:50, and a boat would come pick us up and, I guess, take us to wherever we were getting the other boat. So we hiked down there, and
we waited
for about 15 minutes. I don't know, maybe almost 20 minutes, and then this guy just shows up. He says nothing. He's got this thick black beard and bushy hair, and he's on one of those two little, was it a little rubber boat?
Was it a regular boat? Yeah.
I can't remember. He just kind of motioned for us to come over. We got in the boat, and he took us over to where we were getting the bigger boat on the main beach of Positano, which is what you see in the postcards, and, there was a woman there that was clearly waiting on us, and I thought all that was organized really well.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with all that.
Yeah. All right. Of course, we did talk about how on the boat we had wine, and we had snacks, and then we had Prosecco, and then we had snacks, and then we had limoncello.
Yeah, and I was all over that, being that I was seasick, and what I wanted to do was drink liquor. Although I did on the way back. because I was feeling much better. We got some great pictures. Met some other couples there. Lots of Australians. Met another couple from New Jersey, and then some people from England. We didn't really talk to any others. But you could hear a lot of regular English. A lot of foreign. When I say a lot of foreigners, there a lot of English speaking foreigners in this part of Italy. All right. So for our last day in Positano, we decided to. We didn't have full days every day. Most of the days were full with doing activities, but we relaxed each evening, went out for dinner and drank wine and walked around to the shops and stuff and bought some things. Lots of cool shops there. I think one of the afternoons we just spent by the pool and then at the beach and just chilling out. But on our last day there, we decided to do what's called the Path of the Gods, which is a trail that I can't remember how long the trail is. Monica looked it up,
but it's
all along the top of the cliffs. You said it was 6 kilometers.
Yeah.
And there's different ways to do it. One of the ways is to climb the 2,000 steps from the road where we were staying, which is about 200 feet above sea level.
Yeah.
And climb those 2,000 steps up to where the trail is to this village called Nocella.
Yeah. Right?
Well, we weren't really sure if we wanted to do the stairs or not. And we hadn't run in a few days, hadn't really done much except for lots of walking. We thought, how hard can it be, right? So we decided to do the walk, and we do have some audio clips from our hike. I'm going to call it a hike because it was, not only was it a hike up the steps, but once we got on the trail, it was anything but flat, which was kind of how it was advertised, but it was, really gorgeous views. And then we came down, and that's where I got some audio clips. So let's listen to some of those clips. All right, we are on the Path of the Gods trail in which Italian town?
Nocella.
And after we just climbed 2,000 steps, we are at 1,580 feet elevation. That's pretty much straight up over the Mediterranean Sea. So it's, these aren't high mountains, but when you're looking straight down at the Mediterranean, it's a little different perspective.
Yeah.
So we started where?
Positano.
And we came through, what was it, Piazza? Santa Croce?
Santa Croce.
Got a little squeeze of an orange, some fresh water, and we are now on the hiking trail that we thought was going to be flat, but it turns out it's continuing to climb up. And so I wanted to know how high we were, and that's where I got my compass app on my iPhone. So we'll check elevation again when we decide to turn around in about a half hour, and then we're going to go back down to
Nocelle
for lunch.
For lunch.
All right. I'm not even sure if we're halfway down yet. We'll do an elevation check. Kind of curious to know how your legs doing, Mo.
They are shaking and quivering. Wow.
Yeah, mine are majorly quivering.
Major.
And see, the elevation is, shoot, I can't remember how to get to it. How did we get to it? Oh, here it is. We're only 410 feet above sea level.
Wow, we've gone down 1,000.
Come down 1,000 feet in how much time?
20 minutes.
20 minutes? Yeah. Both of our quads are kind of quivering, and I think my sunglasses are gone, which is okay. I can get some new ones. They were not real expensive, but I guess kind of expensive.
Got your money's worth.
Got my money's. I've had money's worth from them. I was just telling Monica, I think I've had them 16 years, 17 years. It's a long time to have a pair of sunglasses. All right, we're going to head on down. All right, we're almost at the bottom. We've got some runners behind us, actually people running down these steps. Now we're going to check elevation. It says 460 feet, but I don't know how it can be that. Oh, sorry, I can't. It says, I don't know what this does. Oh, sorry, 340 feet. It just recalibrated, yeah, above the sea. So the roadway here looks like it'll be probably about 300 feet. You think this is a 40-foot drop? Yeah. All right, so
500 stairs to the beach.
So it's 2,000 steps in 1,200 feet. I can't do public math. I've always said that I couldn't.
A lot in a little.
A lot? All right, so how do you feel?
I am shaky, shaky.
Your legs still quivering?
My legs are shaking. They're quivering. My calves,
mine
my
too.
Thighs.
I mean, it's a gorgeous view, but God, I'm wasted.
It's still downhill to get to the hotel, it seems like.
And then what, 100 plus steps to get up?
Oh, to get up to that room and then
to the room.
Down. To
and then down a couple hundred steps to the swimming pool.
But we're going
to
make it.
Because everything here is on a cliff.
Four happy hours over. Watch out, babe.
All right. So just to kind of wrap things up to where we are now, we're, as I mentioned earlier, we're driving towards Rome, going to bypass that on the southeast side, head to Assisi, where we're going to meet up with Monica's brother Mark and his wife Marta and our daughter. We'll visit with them this evening. We'll visit Assisi tomorrow and Sunday?
Yeah. Well, Sunday, no. We say goodbye Sunday.
Say goodbye Sunday, then we drive to Rome Sunday, stay Sunday night. We stay two nights in Rome?
Sunday, Monday, yep.
Oh, and then we'll leave Tuesday. And one of the highlights for me in Assisi is going to be, I guess, visiting the tomb of St. Francis, because he's my favorite saint. Maybe I'll talk about that in the podcast someday. So Tuscany is full of several medieval towns, lots of them. I don't even know how many. We did day trips to several of them, so we'll just highlight those a little bit. The first one was the Montepulciano, a small medieval town. We you drive up to the top of a mountain where the buildings are all connected, sitting on cliffs with a big wall around them. We found the top when we figured out we couldn't drive the car any further through this small archway. I ended up backing up and finding a parking spot and spending a nice day there. Everything, it seems like everything walks uphill. What else do you remember from Montepulciano?
Just lots of uphill walking. There was a central Duomo and lots of little shops.
Which is the central cathedral, the dome.
Right. Just a really steep climb uphill and back down.
The next one we saw was Orvieto, and that is accessed with something. I think we mentioned it maybe earlier or later in the show. I'm doing this in segments on the funicular.
Yeah.
And that is, explain that.
Well, it's sort of like a tram car that goes straight up the mountain and back down on the track.
It's pulled up by a cable while the other one goes down.
Yeah.
And Orvieto, again, it was a medieval town. Trying to remember the highlights from that. Gosh. Oh, we had a walking tour with Emanuela.
Yeah.
Had lunch up there, and my mom had some. The sun kind of got to her a little bit. She was having some health issues. Might be. We missed some.
Past the town called Bastard.
Oh, Bastard.
Yeah.
This was the thing I remember about Orvieto was they had way back, I guess, in the 1100s, the Pope came to visit that town, and the way he came in was through was the only way. I think that was the only way you could get up in there through the ramp from down below that was heavily guarded by soldiers.
Yeah.
But it was also the lowest area for like the pecking order of people. So all the poor people lived along. What was that area called? It was like a.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
Well, what they did is they put facades on both sides of the roadway, so the Pope would see rich-looking buildings, and then of course they removed them as soon as he left. I thought that was an interesting part of that walking tour. A lot of steep climbs. I think one of the churches we saw there was from. Like right around the 1100s.
They were built on catacombs, so like you could do a tour underneath the city of the original city from the Etruscan times.
And we chose not to do that because those are what mass graves.
Yeah,
talking about.
I think we're just tired too.
We're also tired. The other, I guess, the highlight of some of the medieval towns was our walking tour of Siena, and we just happened to be going the same day as the, I think it's a not biannual, semi-annual. Palio,
yeah.
Which is a three-lap horse race around the Piazza del Campo, and each catalda of the city,
a contrada
of the city, is represented by a horse and a rider, and it's mainly the horse. The riders are hired. The horses are done, whether they're picked by lottery.
Uh-huh.
And it's a real big deal. It's just three laps around, which apparently they were told lasts about 74 seconds. But one of the coolest things is that we were able to walk down to the piazza during the walking tour. We walked through mainly the porcupine district. I guess each contrada has an animal. Like our tour guide was a panther. Her name was Roberta. There's porcupines. There's a goose. What were some of the other ones, do you remember?
She-wolf.
Dolphin.
Caterpillar. Dragon.
And all the people that were there visiting Siena that had some interest in the race had these handkerchiefs that they wore around their neck with their contrada logo on it, so you could tell. So we went into the central piazza, and the city had put dirt down. It's just a big horse track that's put in there twice a year and then removed for this race. We didn't stay for the race because the middle of the piazza fills up with, what'd she say, something like 20,000 people. We left before that started. Our plan, we were told really to stay clear of that area for that, unless you're kind of local, and we were just tourists, so there was no need for us to be in there. Did we go to one other city? I don't think that was it. That's four cities. And that was our time in Tuscany.
So that's pretty much it. I think I covered everything from that trip. We'll move on to, Ashland Tom's training for his 100-miler up at the Pine Creek Challenge, which is September 10th and 11th. I have committed to helping him with that on race day and leading up to that. And the leading up to that is running with him on the weekends. And I've told him, I said earlier in the show, previous episodes, that I told him I could probably do half his Saturday mileage. I could meet him up and do half of that. And that's what I've been doing. Yesterday I did 15 with him. We did 8 this morning. Ashton Bryan came along this morning. He was tied up yesterday. But the humidity in this part of Virginia is it's just so oppressive and brutal right now. It's so hard to be effective in the training runs because your body's using so much energy to try to keep itself cool. And it really doesn't matter what time you get up. We started 7 o'clock yesterday, which was Saturday morning, the 16th. Started at 6:30 this morning. Doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter if the sun's out, really. It's just so hot. So hopefully the heat training will be of some benefit to Tom on race day, which, of course, his time goal is going to be 24 hours is the initial goal. And then if that doesn't work out, just meet the cutoff of 30 hours. So Brian and I will both be helping him on race day there for anything that he needs out on the trail. His family will also be there. And I think some other friends might drive up. It's about a 6-hour drive from the center of the universe to Pennsylvania, the area of Pennsylvania where the race is. So we'll be working out logistics for that soon. But before that, we got the Dahlgren Heritage Rail Trail 50K on August 6th. I do have a small conflict at work right now involved on that date. It's a Saturday. I have to move around an on-call shift for that, or on-call, three on-call shifts for that day. I should be able to get somebody to cover for me so I can, because I've registered for the race, and I think it was $75, and I would hate to have to forfeit that. So I'll be working on that, and Tom and I will be running together that day, and we're going to be working on his run-walk interval strategy that he's going to employ on race day for the Pine Creek Challenge. So this will be the first time I think I've ever used a 50K race to train for anything, even though I'm not doing the 100-miler. Usually, I've used marathons to train for longer stuff before, but I've never used a 50K to train for anything, so that should be an interesting experience. Then, of course, the Patrick Henry Half Marathon on August 27th right here in Ashland, and Dr. Smitty should be coming for a visit for that. So we'll get some people together to visit with him. All right, we got a couple emails. Some of these are old. Tim checked in from Chattanooga way back in June 12th, just wondering if I was still doing the show. I said, "Yeah, Tim, I'm still doing it. I appreciate you checking in. Sometimes it is just hard to get one out." Of course, heard from Ryan, and it's just sometimes really hard to get one out. And the main thing is because of time. Now, I also heard from Thomas Mueller down in North Carolina. And Thomas, I do have a friend's son is going to be attending Appalachian State. And so I'll have to email you his name just for any strange reason. You teach one of his classes. I don't know if you teach freshmen or not. But I'll let you know his name just in case you cross paths with him and you can make that connection with the podcast. But anyway, Thomas had said that the same Spartan guy that contacted me contacted him. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because no one has taken me up on the free Spartan race offer that was put out in the last show. And all I had asked was that if you're interested in getting a free entry to a Spartan race, if you're into that kind of thing, because I have a free one to offer, be the first person to follow the instructions in episode 227. So if you're interested in that, go back and listen to episode 227, which you could get at ashlanddave.podbean.com. And I'll give it to you because no one's taken me up on it yet. I've kind of gotten down in listeners on the podcast, but still, I thought somebody would have taken me up on it. Looks like Thomas says that he's trying to optimize now for 60. He's going to be 60 years old in December of this year, and he's thinking about doing a short book on optimizing for 60. And he's doing about an hour a day and running. And the significance of Thomas is that I did the Charlotte Ultra 2 years. I guess it was only 2 years that the race was in existence, and he was there down there. I knew who he was, but I just didn't meet him until afterwards doing the podcast. It's kind of a weird situation. And that right now is that it? That is it for the. Let's see, I got one from Down Under Dave. He's got a small souvenir of a little island he wants to send to me, so he wanted me my address. So, Dave, I did send that to you. He said he's struggling with a mildly twisted ankle, not enough to stop him, but it's slowing him down, and I'm pretty sure that he has got big adventures coming up there. He's the one who lives down in New Zealand. And, Dave, you'll know that we met some fine people from Australia on our trip to Italy. More than once we ran into folks, and everybody... And some of them were actually from New Zealanders. I guess they call them Kiwis. And they were just wonderful people. Just very nice. It was two families we met at the hotel that we stayed at in Positano, and just wonderful folks. Very nice. One guy brought us his bicycle and was doing some cycling on those crazy cliff roads that are on the cliffs there. So just thought I'd pass that on. Everybody I've met from Australia up to this point in my life has just been really, really wonderful, and they say a lot for their other countrymen. Okay, well, that's it for the show for this week. I'll be back soon with episode 229. This is Ashton Dave, and if you want to get a hold of me, it's ashtondave@gmail.com. I do take comments and feedback on the show. Keep it in mind that this is a completely amateur podcast that I put out just to share my thoughts about distance running and the different things I experience in my life related to that. So, you know, if you have comments on something else, I'm not really that interested in hearing them because I don't discuss, you know, it's not a discussion forum, the podcast. But if you if you're involved in distance running or have interesting experiences involving that, or even if you've been to Italy and had some interesting experiences there, because that was the content of this show, I'd love to hear from you, ashlanddave@gmail.com. So this is Ashland Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. Don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good week.